one.
Let's go. Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
Welcome to this week's Project Action on Podcast One. And boy, do we got a special episode for you, bringing in my good friend and media director, Chris Leone, because he's as big a fan of this as I am. We're going to tag team it on doing an episode dedicated to the video game Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. Yes, it is getting re-released here this next week. And we thought, you know what, let's do a podcast about it. One of the biggest video game, sports video games of all time, sports video game franchises. It includes action sports, Tony Hawk, some of the best pro skateboarders in the world. Some of them have been guests on this show. And, you know, it's got a cult following. The soundtrack is insane. We've had some of the bands in the soundtrack on this show. It pretty much sums up everything we do here on Project Action. So we're dedicating an hour of podcasting directly to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. So I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. I'd love to hear from you with your thoughts, comments, feedback at JimBeaver15 on social media. And please head over to Apple Podcasts, smash the subscribe button to Project Action if you haven't already. And please leave a rating and or a review. It helps us out a ton, tremendously helps us out. Just 1 through 5 stars. Just lay it down right there. Let us know what you think of the show. But man, it is a big show. So we're going to cut to the chase. We're going to get to that. Before we do, got to tell you about a couple of our amazing partners right here on Project Action. And you know, there's no shortage of action going on in the world with our exclusive partners, BetOnline.ag. Sports are back. NBA playoffs continue this week. NHL playoffs are underway. Major League Baseball is in full swing. There's also UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and soccer. And BetOnline has some of the best odds and lines for the upcoming games and matches. Make sure and stay tuned to this podcast to hear from Adam Carolla in an interview with BetOnline's wagering expert, Dave Mason, as they discuss the return of sports and what wagering fans can expect to see. And you need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening every day live for you to check out. Looking for something else to bet on other than sports? Well, BetOnline has hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and all the best props in the business. Visit BetOnline.ag, use your mobile device, and join now to receive a new welcome bonus and start playing today. BetOnline, they are your online wagering experts. And, you know, with that being said, we do have another partner that's been with us for a very long time, our good friends at GEICO. And did you know that right now GEICO's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of all the money GEICO could already save you. What are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed? Well, Belgian waffles and fresh fruit sound nice, but you know what? It's probably not going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more. And with that, we're going to jump into this segment, hour-long segment I did with my good friend and media director Chris Leone on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. All right. Well, now that the formalities are out of the way, I want to jump into my guest this week, which is my good friend, my media director. You guys are no stranger to my good friend Chris Leone here on Project Action on Podcast One. But Chris, you and I, about a month and a half ago, wrapped out on our favorite racing video games of all time, and some of the best and the worst. And you know, it got me thinking, you and I are both Tony Hawk Pro Skater fans. Tony Hawk Pro Skater comes out this next week. Obviously, if you're listening to this on demand, maybe it's already out, but anyways, it's the re-release of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. And Chris, you and I are both fans of the genre, both fans of the game, both skate fans in general. So it was one of those where we got to talk and I was like, Chris, everybody liked this talking racing video games. Let's see if they like us talking Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And then, maybe just a little bit of skateboarding games in general. And I think maybe we build up to Tony Hawk Pro Skater, but, man, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Jim. And as we're on, I am watching somebody on the Tony Hawk Twitter account doing a demo run at, I can't tell if it's the first or the second school. On the Tony Hawk Twitter account. And man, I am being put to shame. I thought I was good, and now I'm just kind of embarrassed that I ever thought I was good, because this guy is in the middle of about a 20 million point combo. And that just ain't right, dude. That just ain't right.
Well, that being said, I mean, you know, I know this is going to be about Tony Hawk Pro Skater, and I'm going to tell you, it defined my freshman year in college. I don't want to say defined it, but man, it had a huge, huge, I guess, part of my freshman year in college. You know, you go away to college and you've got a lot of time sitting in the dorms, and what do? You play video games, right? And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater came out, and I got to tell you, man, we sat there till all hours of the night. There was, you know, a couple of us in the dorm, and we just sit there taking turns burning session after session on that game, you know, trying to up each other, trying to get the high scores. And, like, and, you know, truthfully, it was the first skateboarding video game that was actually really good. I mean, there was some good ones before that, but I mean, this one was actually made you kind of feel like you're actually skateboarding, you know, to an extent. You had some control over things, and I think that was, that was kind of what the allure was, because nothing up to that point, Chris, was really ever released that kind of replicated skateboarding.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's, and the 90s were such a crucial time in the world of video games, right? And obviously you were a little older than me. You were in college. I was still, you know, maybe elementary school age, I guess, you know, experiencing some of these games. And I was a PlayStation loyalist. I didn't even have an N64 until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, me neither. I'm in the same boat there. And this was for you Xbox fans, this is pre-Xbox era. So don't even go. Xbox came in late. They were like the next gen. We're talking PS1 here.
Oh yeah. No, and I mean, you had so many classic games coming out in that era, you know, especially on PlayStation. I mean, you had the Gran Turismos of the world, you had the Crash Bandicoots, the Spyro the Dragons. Madden obviously really established itself in this era as, you know, it built the foundations for what Madden is today. But the one game that I always came back to, and to this day, all of my, I don't play emulators. I use the consoles that were released in the era that they were released. I have a PS2 upstairs. You know, I have a PS1. I have a Sega Dreamcast in my basement, you know, that's next to the N64, which is collecting dust. But Tony Hawk is that game that I would always come back to. You know, I remember the first thing that I did when I had some disposable income was buy another PlayStation 1 to go back to the Tony Hawk games. And admittedly, I came in a little late because I came in with two. And so I'm not used to a world in Tony Hawk without manuals. But, you know, it was one of those games that just, it didn't just define video game experience, but it defined culture in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. It was one of those things that it wasn't just a reflection of what was happening in the world culturally, but it reflected it right back and it shaped culture. You know, it was one of those things that it helped amplify things like X Games, which were already taking off because of ESPN. Oh. You know, it helped amplify all of these other action sports things, all of these different athletes that were involved. You know, Tony picked just an absolute wrecking crew of skateboarders to get involved with the first one. And then they just continued to, you know, increase and increase. And now we're all excited because September 4th, this new one is dropping. And not only do you have the entire original crew back, but you've got the next generation of skateboarders who are really defining what it means to be a pro skateboarder in this era. And so it's really exciting not only to get back to some of those great childhood memories of playing that game, but have it, you know, ported over to the current generation of consoles, introduce new people to it. And by the way, having played the hell out of the demo, it feels right. It feels exactly like it used to.
Well, and I think that's, you know, and I want to go back and kind of talk about a little skateboard video game history as we get into this. But I think, truthfully, it wasn't the graphics. Obviously, Tony Hawk was riding away from X Games and the, you know, in the 900, and, you know, and then this game drops, got all these other skaters, and, you know, there was a lot going in. But the biggest thing is up until this point, the gameplay was garbage, complete garbage on any skateboard video game. Nothing felt right. And regardless of the graphics, the skaters, the soundtrack, I mean, we can talk about the soundtrack for years, how great that was, but, like, legitimately, it was the gameplay. It was so tight. It felt right. And I think this was the very first ever video game skateboarding video game that the gameplay was so tight. It kind of goes back to the whole like Super Mario Brothers thing. Super Mario Brothers 1, like platformers existed before then, but that one got the gameplay right. It was so tight that still today you can play it and ignore the graphics and it's still a good game. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, get a copy for the original PlayStation, go back, put it in, play it, and regardless of the graphics, yes, they are dated, the game still feels right. And when you have it, and that's really what defines a timeless game, is when the gameplay is right, the graphics mean nothing because the game's still good and it's still fun to play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and there were other skate games out there, you know, like you said. I mean, Street Skater is, now I didn't have Street Skater when it was initially released. One of the things that I did over the past couple of years, you know, when I had moved into the house and, you know, when I moved, certainly when I moved out of the city of Boston into the suburbs and kind of needed more things to do because I wasn't hanging out, you know, just walking to bars all the time, was I started buying all these old skateboard games to see what I had missed and what else had been going on in the industry running parallel to Tony Hawk. And, you know, and Street Skater was one of the ones that I kind of played a lot because that actually came out before Tony Hawk. And it wasn't until Tony Hawk, it's not just the controls to me that made Tony Hawk so defining, but the fact that they figured out what to do with a skateboarding game at that point. Tony Hawk, the original Tony Hawk, didn't have a lot of focus on the downhill levels. You did have one. You had Phoenix, I believe, but I think that was one of the only ones. Previously, everything in skateboarding games, it had been kind of a marriage of doing tricks and something almost like pole position, where you were just sort of following the path. You weren't really doing a run in a skate park or anything like that. You were following, I mean, hell, some of them had time limits and checkpoints. It was almost more of a racing game than a skateboarding game. It just, when you moved to Tony Hawk and the game started becoming about those timed runs and setting the high scores that way, rather than going through the almost being speed and style, I guess, rather than, you know, a pure scoring run. I mean, to me, I think that revolutionized gameplay of skateboarding games. You can't really find a skateboarding game after the release of Tony Hawk 1 that went back to that other model. You don't have other games like Street Skater where you're sort of following that path in some of the levels. And I don't think you'll ever really see a remaster of a game like that. It's not what the genre is about. And the folks at Activision and the folks at Neversoft were the ones who really hit on that. And I think figured out, this is what a skateboarding game needs to be, and didn't just nail that for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, but nailed it for the entire action sports industry. And they branched out into bikes with Matt Hoffman, and then Acclaim did the Dave Mira games. And, you know, it just, they defined the industry with Tony Hawk 1 in terms of not just, like you said, how the game should feel when you play it, but what you should actually be doing in the game.
Yeah, well, and the game engine, you know, that game engine, actually, you mentioned Matt Hoffman's, and I, you know, I had the Dave Mirra game as well, but you got to mention that game engine was so good and the gameplay was so tight. It lent itself to not only Matt Hoffman's Pro BMX, Sean Murray's Pro Wakeboarding, Kelly Slater's Pro Surfing. That same game engine actually got spread over multiple action sports genres because it was so good. And, you know, and those are a couple of games, like the best surfing video game of all time. Yeah, Kelly Slater's Pro Surfer. You know, best wakeboarding. Well, I think probably the only wakeboarding game of all time, but it's actually really damn good, is Sean Murray's Pro Wakeboarder, because it was based on the Tony Hawk game engine by the same company. Like, they knew they had lightning in a bottle, and man, they exploited it, but I don't want to say exploited it in a bad way. They actually just brought action sports what they'd been dying for years, you know. But I do want to go back before we jump into more Tony Hawk's. And you mentioned Street Skater, and I played that because my brother had a copy of that game, and I was in college, so I got to play it when I came back home. And it was decent at the time. I'm not going to say that was a bad game, Chris. We did have some bad games that era. There was one that was called, I don't know if you've ever heard of, 3 Extreme, But 3 Extreme is the most garbage of all garbage video games. Literally, this thing, I don't even know why it has a Wikipedia page, because it probably should just be banished off the face of the earth. But they tried to do, it was BMX, inline skates, and skateboarding. And they pitched it as like this X Games type game. And it was made by 989 Studios, which makes it even more disappointing because they're actually a reputable studio. But it was all downhill stuff. And it was just, I remember, you look at the cover art, you're like, man, I want this game. You get it. And you're like, what is this? It is horrible. So, you know, that was in the era. So, but I'm just looking down this list because I found a list on Wikipedia of all the great, every skateboarding video game ever made. And I'm going to go back to the start because probably the original two that I remember, and everybody who's ever been to an arcade has played this one, 720. And that was actually a really damn good video game, you know. The only problem was is they had the bees that followed you and stung you and then you died, but after your time was up. But that was actually a damn good game. And I know I've actually been watching a lot of skateboarding documentaries, and I think Steve Caballero actually was involved with 720 in the marketing of it and some of the gameplay and stuff like that, which makes sense. But 720 was a damn good game. I still would love to get a cabinet for the studio just to have, because it would be a ton of fun, especially if there's a way to turn the bees off so you could actually just skate around and have fun. But it had actually, Chris, do you remember that game? I mean, it had more of the skate park feel. It, you know, it's like they actually did something really good. And we're talking early 80s, mid 80s at this point. And then it was like all of a sudden skateboarding just went off the rails. I'm like, man, 720, if you would have just like followed up on what you had, it's like, I don't know, Chris, like it was a damn good game.
Yeah, that I think it predated me a little bit. They may have had at the local skating rink, they might have had a 720 cabinet, but I always got distracted by that Simpsons game where like it's like that Simpsons fighting game. I think they just called it the Simpsons, but for whatever reason, probably just because, you know, 90s and Bart Simpson at the time was still, you know, I think more culturally relevant. And I hate to say that, but as somebody who is in way too many Simpsons meme groups on Facebook, but, you know, I don't remember ever really playing 720 as a kid, and certainly don't have the cabinet. And I don't think any of the compilation games that I ever bought with all the old arcade cabinets on them that got re-released for like PlayStation 1 or 2, I don't think I ever had that on there. So might have predated me a little bit. I kind of jumped in more obviously in the 90s. I haven't perfected time travel yet, but if I can get back to the 80s and play it, I will certainly let you know. That that well, Project Action may take on a very different theme.
Well, for
a little more about time travel, huh?
Yeah, for the sake of this show, I'm going to give you a rundown real quick of some of the games that I played in the 80s, just when skateboarding video games were first coming in. There's a game called California Games that came out on the Apple computer, and it's actually pretty damn good. It had a bunch of stupid stuff like hacky sack, roller skating, and frisbee in it, but they actually had a half pipe. And it was actually, that was the highlight of the whole damn game, was the half pipe on the skateboards. Trust me, it wasn't hacky sack and flying disc and whatever the hell else they had in there. But yeah, so there was California Games. Then going, I know at one point ESPN released like an X Games thing, and that was, I think, for PS2. And I remember that being kind of a steaming pile of garbage as well. It was like Tony Hawk's was out there, so it was like X Games. Oh, well, we got to cash in on that. They threw out some garbage game. I think MTV threw out something too with Andy McDonald trying to compete with Tony Hawk, which it wasn't bad, but it wasn't Tony Hawk's either. And it's like, so I'm just looking down this list of games. So this was the first game I actually ever owned and I put a ton of time in. And this was an NES era. Do you have an NES, Chris?
No, I never went far back enough for the NES. I did, as a kid, I did have a Mattel in television that was free from a thrift store, but but I don't think they ever actually got skateboarding on that system. And frankly, I don't think we ever booted that system. So
yeah, there is,
it was just taking up space.
Yeah, there is. So if you are an NES fan out there listening to this, and I know there's probably quite a few of you, there is a skateboard game that is worth buying and worth owning. And it's called Skate or Die by Ultra Games. It was actually really good. So I had that as a kid in the 80s, and that was the best home skateboarding game you could find. I think there was a follow-up, Skate or Die 2. I never played that one. I'm assuming it was probably decent because the first one was so good. But it was actually a really, really good game. So if you're an NES, like a vintage, you know, I guess video game person with an NES, look up Skate or Die. The cover art's actually really rad for it too. It's got a guy doing a hand plant on a half pipe, but it lives up to it. It's actually a very good game. So that one I invested a ton of time in as a kid. And it was a really, really fun game, you know, but, you know, all this is going on. And then, like you said, Street Skater came out on PlayStation, and then all of a sudden X Games hit, Tony Hawk does a 900, skateboarding's kind of on the forefront of everything. And then boom, Tony Hawk drops this game. Instantly, he becomes even a bigger celebrity than he is, Chris. Then he brings everybody with him that was kind of popular at the time. I mean, Bucky Lassick was involved here, Bob Burnquist. I know Chad Muska. I just watched a documentary 2 days ago on Chad Muska, which we could do an entire episode on Chad Muska. That right there is a bucket list interview for me, if I could ever do Chad Muska on the show. But he was even talking about it. He goes, look, man, he goes, I was popular at that point. And he goes, you know, he's like, because of his skating and because of his antics and, you know, and he kind of, but Tony Hawk hit. And now all of a sudden, like he said, that video game, he goes, he went from being like this super popular skater to all of a sudden he's hanging out in clubs with Paris Hilton and like Nicole Richie and like full on Hollywood celebrity Muska. They did a European tour for one of his skateboard companies, and he said that video game, literally, he goes, I had 300, 400 kids chasing me down the street at one point. And he goes, I was running, trying to get in a taxi cab because that video game literally made him this international celebrity, you know. And that's all per Chad Muska in this documentary talking about this video game, you know. And he goes, you don't realize what that game did at the time for all of us skaters. Like, skateboarding, because of Tony, was being brought into the spotlight. And he goes, that video game now all of a sudden put us in the households of all these young kids who probably didn't even like skateboarding at the time or didn't follow it much. They didn't watch the videos and the magazines or X Games. But now they're playing the video game and they know my name. They don't really know who I am and what I do. But he's like, they know the name. And so all of a sudden he's like, we are instant celebrity across the globe. And he's like, literally, he's like, you don't realize how much of an impact Tony Hawk's Pro Skater had on the world of skateboarding, Chris.
No doubt. And what it did for some of the skaters. I mean, yeah, like you said, it was certainly a window for the general public to discover some of these people. I mean, for me, discovering some of the skaters who watching them kind of changed my life. And I'll get to that in a second. But to me, so there's Andrew Reynolds did an interview once, somebody who's kind of been involved in those games since the beginning. And one of the things that all the skaters who were involved in, I think they all agreed to split the money that they were getting equally, and everybody got paid. I mean, you had Alyssa Steamer. So Alyssa Steamer was the first female skateboarder in these games, and she got paid. I mean, literally, that being involved in that game changed her life. You know, I guess she owns property in Florida, and her whole life is apparently facilitated by the fact that she owns investment property and, you know, the rent basically facilitates her life in California. And it's like, you know, so first of all, kind of kills a couple of stereotypes there, right? You know, the stereotype that you can't make money in action sports and the stereotype that people involved in action sports can't make sound financial decisions. But, you know, guys were the people involved were getting hundreds of thousands of dollars being a part of this game because it was such a phenomenon. And yeah, like you talked about, some of these skaters, you know, people who I discovered and really fell in love with the sport of skateboarding through the first game that I had. And then I started subscribing to Transworld Skateboarding. And then my local town built a skate park. And, you know, I was somebody who was, I would always use Rodney Mullen because I love Flatland, and, you know, Rodney's parts, out of all the parts in all the games, were always the ones that captivated me the most, and always had respect for Steve Caballero with, you know, everything that he did, and both playing music and skating. And then, and Bucky Lassick. And I got to tell you, I sucked at skating as Bucky. I still suck skating as Bucky. It's out of all the different characters in the game, for whatever reason, because Bucky's got a couple of different tricks in there and just they're on button combos that I just milk with every other skater. And it just doesn't work for me. But Bucky had to be one of those people because years and years before we ever worked together in GRC, and I don't think I've told this story to everybody I know, but I've never told it on air. Years and years before, you know, we worked together in GRC, Bucky Lassick opened a burrito shop in my hometown. And I'm not from Maryland. I'm not from anywhere that Bucky has ever lived. You know, I grew up in like the North Shore of Massachusetts. And yet, Newburyport, Mass, Bucky's Burritos just pops in one year while I'm like a teenager. And they're serving California-style burritos. And the place was so cool. You walked in and there was a half pipe. You walked through the half pipe to go order your burrito. And I mean, really, it was... Nowadays, you go to a Chipotle or a Qdoba, and it's kind of the same model of doing business, kind of that assembly line type burrito. But between the marketing and the fact that you had this huge name pro skater attached to it, and he was at the first, you know, he was at the grand opening and he was giving out autographs and all this stuff. And God, it was so cool. They were like filming a TV show when we first got in. It was wild. It was, and the burrito was great. That was the first burrito I ever ate, to be honest with you. I was a real picky kid. It only lasted like a year and a half, maybe 2 years though, before it ended up shutting down. I guess the craze kind of died off. And worked with Bucky that first year at GRC, and I never had the stones to ask him what happened to the burrito place, because I figured it probably would have been bad. So I had to wait until second year of working at GRC, and we're in Barbados, and it's Top Gear Festival. It was that year where we were kind of the support act that stole the show. So everybody's super stoked, and we're all at the after party that was on the other side of the country of Barbados, because Barbados is a fairly small country. You could drive coast to coast in half an hour, which I had to do. Everybody left me behind. I was waiting to get the media recap out, and they finally told me just wait until the morning, and everybody had left, although they left me with a vehicle. So I'm like, oh, well, great. Now I can't really have fun at the after party because I've got to drive. And not only that, the vehicle was stick, which I hadn't driven in about a year, and it was right-hand drive, so I'm having to reteach myself stick backwards to get across the country of Barbados to get to this after party. And at that point, I just kind of figured, you know what? What the hell? I'm just going to have as much fun with this night as I can. All bets are off. And Bucky was there. And as part of that ethos, I finally had the stones to just ask him what happened to Bucky's burritos. And he just said, yeah, no, it was, you know, I had issues with my business partner and it just fell apart. So there was no spectacular story to that, but I finally, after about a decade of wondering, I finally had my closure on my curiosity as to what happened to Bucky's burritos from that night. And actually, I think I ended up driving Bucky, Jared DeAnda, a few other people home because, again, I had driven, so I had to be the sober man, the straight man. So we had somebody to get everybody home at 3 a.m, but that was the night I finally learned what the hell happened to my favorite burrito joint as a kid. So, and that all comes from Tony Hawk, you know, that place does not exist without Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
No. So here's a question going back to the game, because I love Bucky. Bucky's one of my favorite people, I say, in motorsports and action sports. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Bucky. You know, he chimes in on my Instagram once in a while on certain stuff. And I know you got to give a shout out because he's got two brand new Pal Peralta boards coming out. I believe they release in October. But it sounds like They're both awesome. That you can pre-order them. I've actually got pre-orders in for both boards. But that being a side note, who was your favorite skater to play in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater? Because you didn't play a lot of the original. So I played the original and the second. Those were the two I played most. And then after that, I played some of them hit and miss. So I can chime in on the second, but the first one I really invested a ton of time in. Did you play the first at all, or were you just coming in at the second, Chris?
I think I played the first a little bit over the years, but it was always so hard for me to get good at the first, because when you come in with the second, like I said, when you introduce something like the manual, you're not coming back from that. When you introduce something like the revert a little later in the series, you're not coming back from that. You know, it's really hard to adapt backwards. So me coming in when I did, I'm still able to go into two and play without the reverts and be able to be good at that game. And, you know, I have the I have totally rewritten the high scores on my copy of two, just with they're all my initials on there on my copy, and they're all up in the, and I'm not using fly mode, and I'm not cheating on that, and I'm not using perfect balance. They're natural millions and whatever. I change up my tricks. I would always cater. I used a little bit of everybody, figured out the trick styles, and adapted whichever skater I liked the most to kind of, you know, fit those trick styles. So for me, it really was Rodney Mullen, though, just because of that manual balance. And I really would lean on Rodney throughout a lot of the games. Eric Costing quite a bit, too. Everybody else was kind of just when you wanted to go in and just start a new career mode, and it was, hey, let's pick a different skater and move forward. And, you know, like when I purchased the game again out of college and had a PS1 and would have buddies come over and hang out and play, then we would do, it was like one day we'd pick, oh, we'll do this guy and then see how far we can get before, you know, we've got to actually follow adult responsibilities. And then the next time we'd come back over and we'd pick that up and just finish it off and then pick a new one. But no, me on my own, Rodney basically throughout all the games, Eric Costin throughout pretty much all the games. I would use Tony himself quite a bit as well, even though I was much more of a street skater than the vert skater, and it didn't always sort of apply. But, you know, again, if you were somebody who was hardcore enough to sort of go in and make your trick settings match up to how you skated within the game, you know, like for me, I'd always change all of the specials to up, down, or down, up, because then I could just do an easy flick and get into the special. And that was a game changer for me, you know. But it was, if you had to keep people default, then either Rodney for the manuals or Tony, because right down circle is probably ingrained in all of our collective memories to do the 900. It's like up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, BA start.
Yeah, got you there. I know I was always a Bob Burnquist fan, because going back to the first one, there weren't any manuals. So to link your tricks, you had to get really creative. And so you did that through grinding. So with him, his special was the one-footed Smith grind, right? So, you know, in order to get the super high scores and keep linking, you had to jump back and forth between rails and do all this other stuff. So it was like with Burnquist, it was, you know what I mean? You could do that if you knew where to hop on rails, and then you could keep your special going, you know, because he had the one-footed Smith. So I was able to use him, you know, just because his specials were right, you know what I mean, to link a bunch of tricks together and things like that. So I always defaulted to Bob Burnquist, and he had the backflip as well, if I'm remembering right. So he had some fun stuff. So I was always a Burnquist fan, and I know, like, my favorite on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, because I knew how to use it to my advantage, was the skate park in Chicago. They had the big ramp. I remember I backflip over the half pipe and then land on the wall, and there was a ledge, and you could sit there and you backflip, do a special backflip over the half pipe, you'd land on the ledge in a one-footed Smith, and then you'd immediately start like jumping and doing kickflips and re-landing in the one-footed Smith. And I laugh because the muscle memory with my fingers had to be insane there. And like you could link these million-point combos together and stuff like that and do it without cheats. But I'm just laughing because I'm wondering when I actually download this new one and you know, the remaster and go to it, I'm wondering how long it's going to take to get my muscle memory and my fingers back.
Dude, it's like riding a bike. I think my first demo run, and admittedly, I still play the Tony Hawk games, you know, at least once every couple of months before this one got announced and dropped in on the original systems. But I jumped in, and my first run was in the half million, like on the warehouse with all the muscle memory from the manuals and the reverts with Tony without changing the tricks and without even looking up the specials. So All I had was basically the kickflip McTwist and the 900, and I didn't have any grinds or anything like that. Once I started working into those, then yeah, it was getting back up to the million sort of area. So, but now it's, you know, and you mentioned Bob Burnquist, and to me, kind of one of the wildest things, when Tony Hawk 3 dropped, Bob dropped off the roster. Bob got replaced by Bam Margera. And Bob actually did one of those X Games, or did that X Games skateboarding game that dropped on PS2. He was kind of the face of that, and which makes sense and was kind of a big get for them based on how many X Games medals Bob landed. I mean, you need to have somebody like that. It was wild. You started getting to that point, that era, where everybody was really taking all those medals at X Games. Most of them were landing features somewhere. You mentioned the MTV game with Andy McDonald, and you know that was Andy Mack's game, and the MTV games were all right. I think out of all the ones that they did, the snowboarding one was probably the best one, Pure Ride. That was a really good game. MTV skateboarding didn't quite, I think, match up to what Tony Hawk did, and certainly ESPN X Games skateboarding didn't. But if we're talking knockoff, well, knockoff's not the right word, but if we're talking counter games to Tony Hawk and the best counter games, and this was that PS2 era, it was around the Tony Hawk 3, Tony Hawk 4 era, Konami did ESPN X Games skateboarding, and then they released a second one called Evolution Skateboarding. They didn't have the ESPN license anymore, and they came out with Evolution the next year. But Evolution actually did a lot of things for skateboarding video games that I think were a little bit underrated. And God, I've actually got to go back to Grind Session in a minute too, because Grind Session was really underrated too. But Evolution Skateboarding, not only did it have a totally different roster of skaters, where you had Danny Way, you had Art Osari, you had Mark Appleyard, Kerry Goetz. That game was how I discovered Kerry Goetz, and Kerry Goetz went on to become one of my favorite skaters. You also had a career path where everybody's path in career mode was totally different. And that was super cool to me too, you know, because that wasn't something that you got in the Tony Hawk games. You had a lot more, admittedly a little smaller and maybe less complex levels in Evolution Skateboarding, but you had something like 18 to 20 different levels that were in that game. And depending upon who you chose, your path through the game was totally different. And that was, I mean, that was awesome. So, I mean, I guess that one, I guess, would have to be the number two. Grind Session, though, if you got into Grind Session, if you really decided to work on playing it, there was a reason why the guys at Shaba Games who did Grind Session ended up working on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 as a PlayStation game when the PS2 had come out and the focus was on PS2. They got called in for a reason, and it was because they really did a strong, strong skateboarding video game. Grind Session, you know, you had the pro skaters, and I'm blanking off the top of my head as to who was in that game. Ed Templeton, I know, was in that game, and obviously Ed's a legend of the sport, but the mechanics were pretty similar. The key similarity, though, between Grind Session on the PS1 and Evolution Skateboarding on the PS2 was that they almost nailed the model. And You know, Jim, I know we both played Little League as a kid. You remember standing in the on-deck circle with the bat and warming up, and you'd throw the donut on the bat and you'd swing the bat around before you'd go up to the plate because you'd move the bat faster, you know, in the actual at-bat? Yeah. That's what Grind Session did if you played Grind Session before Tony Hawk 1 or 2. And that's what Evolution Skateboarding did if you played Evolution Skateboarding before Tony Hawk 3 or 4. I was the best Tony Hawk player out of all the kids that I knew. It was the only video game I was any good at that wasn't a racing game. And my friends, when they would come over, they would tell me, hey, if we're going to play Tony Hawk, you're not allowed to play beforehand. And I said, fine. So I'd go play Evolution, and I'd actually be better because I played Evolution, and everything would feel so much faster and so much more fluid. And all my friends were all BS, like, oh, you suck, you cheated, you know, you're whatever. And like, you told me not to play Tony Hawk beforehand. I didn't play Tony Hawk beforehand. I don't know what you want from me. So those games, they're worthy competitors. They're not the Tony Hawk games. They weren't as defining to, and certainly neither of them having a face, like it wasn't Ed Templeton's Grind Session, right? It wasn't Danny Way's Evolution Skateboarding. And I think that may have hurt them a little bit because they didn't have a starring figure the way that Tony Hawk was, an ambassador that sort of lended their name to that credibility. But they were damn good products, and they were very close to the caliber of the Tony Hawk games that were coming out at the time. And it's something where if you've played all the Tony Hawk games to death and you're bored of them somehow, I don't know how you would be, but if you just need something to change it up and do something different, you can jump into Grind Session or you can jump into Evolution Skateboarding and get a close enough experience in terms of responsiveness on controls and feel and everything porting over and feeling right. You know, where you have this other window of different games from this era that you can play and sort of relive those experiences and have things that are fresh and have to relearn things and, you know, not know the tricks to every single level to be able to get through all of them. So, you know, I played a lot of both of those games as well and had a great time with both of those games as well. Certainly, again, they're no Tony Hawk, but, you know, what is? It's like Madden versus the NFL 2K games when ESPN and Sega were doing those. The ESPN games were real close. They weren't the same thing, but they were real close. It's like most games that had direct sort of competitors like that. You know, you could get it close and have another experience and have twice as much quality gameplay. So if you're like me and you do want to play some of those other things, and especially if you want to warm up with something where the controls aren't quite as responsive because they'll make you better in Tony Hawk, then yeah, Evolution and Grind Session, and you can probably pick them both up pretty cheap on eBay.
Well, I think the only real competitor they had ever to Tony Hawk was ended up being the Skate series. And I never played any of the Skate series. I know the controls and mechanics are completely different. They tried to change everything Tony Hawk did, but I know EA, you know, had a lot of success with that series.
Yeah, no doubt. And admittedly, I didn't play a lot of the Skate games either. And it's part of it is just to do with that era moving towards more flick type controls and joystick type controls. Like, that's why I gave up playing NHL games. I can't dangle. I can't deke. I can't do that stuff. I am a north-south person when it comes to sports video games. I mean, I'm better suited to a game like NHL Hits when it comes to something like that.
Right.
That was one of the games that I also kind of no-lifed as a kid with buddies where, in that, and not to deviate too much, but where you'd play the games, they were 3-on-3. You could only have one guy in the penalty box at a time. So you immediately take that penalty for checking the goalie, because that was the only penalty that would take somebody off the ice. And then you shoot the puck after your buddy has checked the goalie, because you can't get repenalized, and you just keep firing on open nets. And that's how you'd get through career mode as two players in that game. You know, so I've exposed the strategy now. We can't have championships of that game anymore because I've just broken it. But anyhow, when EA started moving towards those joystick type control systems for everything, and Skate was certainly a game like that, I couldn't do it anymore. It's just not how I play games. I mean,
no, I agree.
It's funny because I work for a computer game simulation company as well with iRacing, and I'm like the world's worst iRacer. I don't do the staff races because they don't need any more moving chicanes out there than they might already have. But I played in such a particular era, right? Where, you know, I'm used to playing a certain way. And if I'm playing that way, then I can go out and kick butt. And that's why I'm so hyped for this Tony Hawk re-release, because it, playing the demo, it plays exactly how it played when it first came out. It feels right. The controls are the same. Everything is exactly how I remember it. And by the way, some credit to Sony there too, for not completely reinventing the wheel with its controllers and keeping the same basic fundamentals from the beginning of the PS1 all the way down the line to the PS4 that we've got now. But, you know, as video games evolved, it's just, and then you get to a point too, obviously, and this is just adulthood coming in. You don't have the time to go relearn all of these different mechanics and get good at them. You know, you've got other things going on. You know, you've got your job, you've got family, you've got other priorities. So it's just, it's fun to be able, for me, to jump back in and play the game the way that I remember it. And I've never cared much about graphics. That's not a make or break to me with a game. Neat. Like you said, the original Tony Hawk games still are so great and feel so right because of how they play, not how they look. But I don't know. It's just, and then not only that, just the cultural legacy. And we've touched on this a little bit, but Tony Hawk also has one of the top 5 Twitter accounts out there, just for how many people kind of recognize him and just the way that he takes it in stride. Just all the different tweets about, oh, is Tony Hawk on this flight? And then the flight attendant looks up and sees him and says, I guess he is.
Yeah, Tony Hawk, you know, it's funny. He's actually been a great ambassador for skateboarding. There's been a lot of great ambassadors for skateboarding, but you got to give him a lot of credit. I don't know Tony personally, you know, but never met him, never done an interview with him. But I have to give him a lot of credit because he's so, so very much the ambassador that skateboard needs, you know, globally. And he actually knows that. And he does a lot with inner city youth and, you know, getting skate parks into areas of the country that don't exactly have money. The cities are poor and things like that. And he gets grants set up and provides skate parks there. And man, I mean, he's just all around a great guy. You know, obviously, you know, he's taking the fame that came with this video game or with X Games and his skateboarding career. And he's actually reinvesting it back into, you know, the skating community and the kids coming up. And, you know, anybody like that, Chris, you just got to tip the cap to, man.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Tony has done so much for the sport on all levels. I mean, I remember watching Tony Hawk's Boom Boom Huck Jam in person as a kid. That was my first Social D concert too. And, you know, just again, culturally, it's the music, the amount of different bands that I think we all discovered through the Tony Hawk games. Everybody likes to, you know, sort of pump Goldfinger's Superman as the Tony Hawk, like the defining song. But, oh man, I don't know if we haven't even touched on the soundtracks, man. What was out of all the different games, did you have a track that every time it came on, you're like, oh yeah, this is mine. And then this is the track where you bust out the runs.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, like you said, Goldfinger was legit. The one I'm not actually a huge fan of the song, but it pops into my head is Primus, Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. Just because I feel like...
Gee, I wonder why we'd think of that one, huh?
No, but it's just there's something about that. But I got to say, probably Goldfinger Superman, you know, that one I think was one. But I mean, I'm looking down the soundtrack list right now. Dead Kennedys, Goldfinger, Primus, Suicidal Tendencies, Suicide Machines, The Vandals. I mean, you've got some legit... I mean, and this is just, you know, this is just Tony Hawk 1. But I'm looking down that going, man, you got like some iconic bands right there.
Man, I think for me, it was the songs from two. I think it was Cyclone by Dub Pistols and No Cigar by Millencolin. Those were the ones that if those came on, like Tony Hawk 2 got me into Millencolin. And Millencolin's
one of the all-time greats as far as I'm concerned. So
yeah, and that kind of started getting me into all of the other bands and just everything that had come out. God, it's...
Papa Roach was in Tony Hawk 2, I'm looking, and that must have been like right when they started kind of coming into things. Rage Against the Machine. I'm a massive Rage Against the Machine fan. They were in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
God, yeah. Way for us to bury the lead with the intro song from the game, huh?
All right. Yeah. It's just like,
I'm
just looking, man. Everything about that, you know, when you look back, Chris, and we kind of wrap things up here, but when you look back, the gameplay was great. The soundtrack was great. They used real life skaters. That was great. Like everything about that game, like it was the first time the full total package had ever been put together. And I think, and the truth is a lot of times you slap somebody's name on it and it's garbage. This actually lived up to the hype, fully 100% lived up to the hype. Everything about it was great. And it's still a game that, you know, what are we looking at 20 years later, 20 plus years later? It's still that good to play today as it was then. That's why they're re-releasing it. Literally, gameplay is going to be exactly the same. They're going to put a little bit of polish on the graphics and call it good. You know, like to me, that is, you know, you look at the I would say 50 greatest video games of all time. Tony Hawk's is definitely going to be on the list. And that's saying something when you can count, you know, the amount of amazing video games that have come out.
No doubt. And God knows how many we'd have to do like a whole podcasting series to touch on everything, because we didn't even touch on how Underground completely changed the game and having the open world and the story mode. We didn't even touch on some of the fantasy skaters and people that came in. I mean, did you ever want to skate as Eddie from Iron Maiden or Gene Simmons? Well, here's your chance, you know?
Yeah.
It did so much. So much for so many different things. You know, it revolutionized the video game industry. It revolutionized action sports culture. It revolutionized the lives of those who participated in it, whether you're talking about the developers who actually made the game or the skaters who loaned their names and likenesses and special tricks, and, you know, and it certainly... It shaped the childhoods and early adulthoods of people like you and me. I mean, this is for it to be coming out now. And I can't think of a better time too, with the world as screwed up as it is, because it's just, those games are a reminder of a better time for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, in 20 years ago, where we weren't worrying about a lot of the things that we're worrying about today, you know, you can jump back into that and, here's your teenage years, here's your college years, all over again. And, you know, for everybody who's got kids now and, you know, didn't have kids when that game first came out, it's like, this was a huge part of my life when I was younger. And you've got those moments to be able to share. And it's such an awesome re-release. It's something that, I mean, nothing really seems to have the cultural impact anymore that it did 20 years ago in this realm. You know, there's just, the world has changed, but this is one of those things that to everybody who was touched by it, you know, when it first started making its mark and had its heyday, every single person who was touched by that game is going to get touched by that game again. You know, when it finally drops about a week from now. And I have been waiting for that download to come out. I'll probably have to pull an all-nighter when it comes out, and I'll be useless the next day, but you know what? Whatever. It is what it is. It's going to be well worth however many energy drinks or coffees I'm going to have to consume in order to take advantage of my time and be able to play that game. I am so stoked for it. I cannot wait. And the only question is, how long is it going to take for me to complete career mode the first time? Because usually I could do it within a day. Am I just going to rush through it again, or do I need to take it a little slower and savor it this time?
I'm definitely going to savor it. Looking forward to playing it with my daughter, being able to let her experience it for the first time. Should be a lot of fun. Game comes out September 4th on Xbox, PS4, PlayStation, Xbox, and I think somewhere on the PC. So don't exactly know. I'm assuming probably Steam or someplace like that. So, yeah, Chris, fun times, man. Thanks for doing the show today.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks for having me. It's always fun to shoot the breeze about old video games, and especially one that is still probably my go-to. So we'll have to get some esports competitions. I know, you know, with the esports team, obviously I'm not a valuable contributor to that, but if you start doing Tony Hawk competitions, I might be your guy. Maybe.
Well, we'll have to figure something out, man. But thanks a lot, Chris. Oh, man, that was definitely good times talking Tony Hawk's Pro Skater with Chris. Thank you guys for enjoying the fun. And don't forget, we've got a spot with Dave Mason and Adam Carolla coming up after I wrap up the show. You definitely want to stay tuned for that. And speaking of, visit betonline.ag. And don't forget, use that promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, they are your online sportsbook experts. And GEICO, don't forget, they're now offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. Visit GEICO.com and learn more. And yeah, that's about all I got this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Give me a follow at JimBeaver15 on social media. And yeah, don't forget, go over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show, and please leave a rating and or review. And we'll see you next time right here on Project Action on Podcast One.
Well, here we are on lockdown. How are you? It's Booker of the Perez Hilton Podcast with Chris Booker. We get it. We know you're bored. We're still doing shows. We're keeping you up to date with everything entertainment. A little bit of relief from everything that's going on in the world. You could get the show on Spotify. You could get it on your Apple Podcasts or the Podcast One app. Whatever you do, download and subscribe and get the PHP, the Perez Hilton Podcast with Chris Booker. And everything that's entertainment will be covered.
Dave, are you on?
I am on. How do I sound?
You sound like a coward. No.
Oh, what? Wow.
No, you sound good.
Nice.
So sports reopening, things are getting back going. I mean, there's NBA's kind of fun watching from the bubble. I don't mind it that much. I don't know. Dave, Brian, you guys watch sports. Dave, what do you think watching NBA playoffs from the bubble?
I like it. The action's great. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job with it, actually. It looks a lot better than I thought it would. I thought it was going to have that high school gym feel to it, but you watch it, it looks pretty good. It almost looks like you're watching a game in front of fans, you know, just with the sound and everything. So I'm pleasantly surprised by it. And once again, the action's been great on it. So no complaints there. People have been chomping at the bit the last few months to get some action down, and they're back in full force. So we love it.
I don't think it's hurt the UFC from what I can see. The UFC feels fine. I mean, watching it, I don't. Baseball feels a little weird because this is big, empty stadiums. I don't know what football's going to feel like. NASCAR feels kind of fine. I don't know. Brian, what do you think?
I haven't watched a single second of basketball, partially because the Warriors are not playing this year in the playoffs, and partially because it feels weird. But I did watch a little bit of baseball, and there is the crowd noise piped in, and maybe this is the sound effects guy speaking very specifically. As hard as they're trying to do the sound effects of the crowd, they're not timing it right. They're not getting like they should be booing when the pitcher throws over to first for the third time, the visiting pitcher. The crowd noise should escalate or rise based on hits and extra base hits and stolen bases, but they're not doing it. It's just fucking crowd noise that occasionally gets a little louder. It's more distracting than if it was empty.
It was funny. Someone sent me a tweet. Like he said, Trump's golfing when he should have been thrown out the first pitch at the Yankees game. And I was like, he probably just didn't want to hear the sound effects guy playing the booze. You know, and the sound effects guy's like, hey, I'm just doing my job. You know, when the pitcher wipes off too many signals, eventually I have to hit the boo button.
Yeah, and when the catcher comes out to talk on the mound,
I hit the boo button. And when Trump gets out there, I got to hit the boo.
Yeah, you're simulating real life.
So, Dave, what has your scene been like at Bet Online? Like, is it a lot of pent up action, and now it's all kind of getting released on the basketball playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a challenging few months for everybody. You know, our casino numbers were through the roof, our poker numbers are through the roof, and we were grinding on the sports scene. But now that they're back, I mean, players are just coming back in full force. I mean, even the sporting events that were going on during the down months, like those UFC cards were just, I mean, we were setting record numbers. That Masvidal card, that was by far the biggest bet card we've ever done here at Bet Online. So, but yeah, I mean, the baseball action is great. NHL action is great. NBA is awesome. These golf event tournaments are through the roof. And, you know, NFL's, what, 3 weeks? About 3 weeks, NFL starts. College football, we'll see. But as long as we have NFL, we'll be rocking and rolling.
Yeah. You know, the only problem with the COVID-19 in the NFL, for me, traditionally, best time of the season. There's two reasons I love the NFL beginning. I love hanging out and watching the games with the usual suspects, and it usually marks the end of the summer, and the summer always goes out with a big flurry of heat. You know, there's this big, it's always like, oh man, it's September, it's so hot, how can it be so hot? And then it starts to cool off, and then you grab an IPA and you watch the game, and it's this great feeling to it. But here's the problem this year with the COVID-19. Normally, when we get to the end of the summer, pre-NFL season, I'm usually at my lightest weight, anticipation of packing on the weight for the NFL. I always pack on 15 pounds of the season.
Hibernating for the winter, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hot. You're in and out of the pool. You're a little leaner at the end of the summer, and then the NFL hits, and the hot wings and the pizza and the IPAs, and then I always pack on 15 pounds. Now I'm heavy going into the into kickoff of the football season. So I may be morbidly obese now at the end of the NFL season. And that's
dark days.
That's an issue. Hey, Dave.
Yo.
What time is it wherever you're at? I'm curious. And then Brian has a question.
I'm on mountain time. So I guess that's what?
An
2:30?
Hour.
Yeah. Oh, that's it, huh? Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm almost at mid-afternoon nap time once I get off this call.
Sorry, Brian, yes?
Yeah, Dave, you're a betting guy. What odds would you give? I guess it's a question you can answer in parts. What odds would you give for, like, a full college football season happening? Partially, like, you know, just the SEC and maybe the ACC playing, or a postponed season. If you had to, you know, maybe give odds to those, yeah, or another outcome that I might not know of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some in the Pac-12, they're not playing. You know, Big Ten, they're not playing. A couple teams might try to play, but it's a mess. We've had those odds up and down. SEC, we actually put the week one odds up yesterday. They're planning on going forward, but I mean, you know, it's. I think they'll start, but I put it a coin flip if they actually finish. I mean,
I was going to say, what do you think about the season getting canceled midway through? The reason I bring it up, Notre Dame today announced they had 5 kids test positive today for COVID, and it's such, Adam, to your point, it's such a different ecosystem. You know, college versus, you know, pros. Pros, you can kind of bubble. Guys are responsible. They're adults. They have homes. These kids are all living together in college, you know, amongst other students, ostensibly, if the schools go back or not.
Plus, they're not getting paid, too. Yep. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
they're not getting paid, but yes, these are.
Well, you know, some guys are getting paid, but NFL, it's not like their profession yet. So it's a mess, man. I mean, you know, it's been a mess for months, changing rules, and you know, you have these bets. You know, the MLB announces they're going from 10 to 16 teams in a playoff the day of the season. I mean, you know, we have odds to make the playoffs, yes, no, on the site. And now it's like, well, these odds, we got to blow them the frick up. because, I mean, they've gone from 10 to 16 and the odds are based on 10 teams. So it's been like that nonstop. So, you know, from what we're trying to do is just make sure the wording's as tight as possible. I mean, we're putting Heisman odds back up now. Is there even going to be a Heisman? You know, you got to take Pac-12 guys off. Now what do we do with the wagers that were bet on Pac-12 players? And that every day it's a freaking headache, but whatever.
Dave, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because one thing I wanted to ask you next time we talked was, it was a big news in the preseason, spring training when it was going on. There was a prop bet, I think you guys were hosting, about how many Houston Astros would get hit by a pitch this year. Are you still honoring that bet for people?
No, I mean, that's just a prime example. It's just, you know, we had a no action bet, and, you know, we have people bitching. Oh, I bet the owner's like, dude, you know, that's based on 162 games, not 60, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? So, you know, we've been generous on stuff too, like the NBA and NHL divisions. How we graded those was we graded the winners of each division. Like the NHL didn't even have an official winner of divisions, but we graded the leader of the regular season, whatever team was leading those four divisions, as the winner, and we no action everybody else. And we actually ended up doing the same for NBA as well, even though they did technically have a divisional winner. So, you know, we're trying to be as generous as possible in some of the gray area stuff. You know, we graded both sides winners on stuff, you know, winners and no action on the losers and all that crap. But, you know, if it's black, there's just no argument there, man. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
If you're bitching about that, you're just taking a shot, and you can the door's over there if you don't want to bet here.
The door's over there. Hey, Dave Mason, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll be checking in soon. I'm curious about, we'll get into maybe presidential stuff next time we speak.
Oh, I can't wait.
Thanks, Dave Mason.
All right, guys, take care.
Thank you. And let me hit Bet Online. No shortage of action with our exclusive partner, betonline.ag. MLB's in full swing. NBA, well, we talked about that. UFC hasn't slowed down. Boxing's still good. NASCAR's rolling along. Bet Online is best odds and lines for upcoming games and matches. Need more? Bet Online has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC daily. Also, hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, best props in the business as well. And you can visit betonline.ag, it's our exclusive partner at Podcast One. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your free sign up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.